Good morning, and welcome to the continuing podcasts of Cory Doctorow. This is the continuation of the story Truncat, which I read some of to you last week. It's been crazy, as always, just getting settled in here in Los Angeles. I start teaching on Tuesday, so I've been getting ready for that, and also getting ready for the World Science Fiction Convention next week. Those of you who are interested in getting signed, inscribed copies of my books who can't make it to the Worldcon, you can write to Borderlands Books until tomorrow morning, Saturday morning, and they will bring books along, have me sign them, and ship them to you for free within the US or very reasonable rates abroad. So that's a good place to do it. And what other news here? Oh yeah, so this weekend is Goth Day at Disneyland, Bats Day in the Fun Park, so I'm going to be there on Sunday. Maybe I'll see some of you there. All right, here we go. Adrian's agent found the bootleg again, just as he reached the waiting room at Innes College. The French one had passed it on before deleting it to another girl in Kansas. Sighing with relief, he queued the download just as his father arrived. Adrian's father was a parent 22, hardly older seeming than age Adrian himself, though his real age was closer to 122. All Adrian's life, his father had kept himself at an apparent age that was just a few years older than Adrian's own, following a bit of child-rearing wisdom that had been trendy 50 years before, just as the bitchin' society started to mete out woofy punishments for those people selfish enough to contribute to the overcrowding by reproducing. The logic ran that having a father of playmate size would reduce the loneliness of the children of the diminished generation of the day. At 22, Adrian's father was heavy-set and acne-pocked, his meaty pelt bulging whenever it came into contact with the light cotton jellaba that he wore around town. He gave Adrian a curt nod when he arrived, his eyes fixed on a space in the middle distance where his omnipresent HUD shone for him alone. He took a seat next to Adrian and rang his cochlea. Adrian rolled his eyes and answered subvocally. Why his father couldn't have an unmediated conversation was beyond him. "Hi, Dad," he said. "Hi there. Had a good morning." "Good enough," Adrian answered. "How's Mom?" His father subvocalized a chuckle, the sound in Adrian's cochlea blending weirdly with the swallowing sounds from his father's throat. "She's pretty angry. Don't worry about it. We'll do a dog and pony for Bosco, and she'll forget all about it." Bosco opened the office door and greeted them. Adrian's father answered audibly, his voice rusty from disuse. In Bosco's leather-bound academic cave of an office, the two adults chattered boringly and lengthily. Adrian knew the drill, knew that it could be a long time before anyone here had anything to say to him. Sneaking a glance at his father and Bosco, he rolled up the revolutionary's backup and flash-baked it. The life unrolled over his mind, the early days of the bitchin' society, the physical battles and the ego clashes, first adulthood lived as a nomad, trekking around the globe, a second and third adulthood, a fourth moving towards that moment at which the backup was taken, then it when eternity unrolled, and snip, it cut off. Adrian's eyes popped open. Damn! Truncat! The file had been chopped short during transmission between the nodes. Half the revolutionary's life vanished into a random scattering of bits in ether. Bosco was looking expectantly at him, heavy-lidded, wavy hair and thick eyebrows and crinkles at the corners of his eyes from long hours of thinking. He had said something. Hurriedly, Adrian zipped through a short-term AV capture on a HUD, playing back Bosco saying, "Well, Adrian, this is a very well-prepared entrance paper. Can you tell me what it is about mathematics that interests you?" Now Bosco and Adrian's father were both staring, and Adrian mimed concentration, as though he were genuinely considering his answer. In truth, he was paging through his files for the canned response his mother had provided him with, but there was no sense in admitting it. "I've always loved math," he recited, struggling to remember the phrasing. "I just can't help seeing the mathematical relationships in everyday life. It just makes sense to me." Bosco nodded, the ritual response satisfying him. Adrian's father gave him an appraising look and went back to wrangling with Bosco. It all came down to Woofy anyway. Did Adrian's parents have enough reputation capital that their gratitude to Bosco outweighed the upset the teaching staff would feel when they were saddled with a lowly undergrad? The meeting was hardly over before his mother was conferencing Adrian and his father in. As it turns out, Adrian's father had been dumping a real-time video stream to her all through the meeting, and she'd seen it all. "Adrian," she said sharply, "what's the matter with you? You were completely out of it during that whole thing." "I was just thinking, Mom. I got distracted. I think it went well anyway, right, Dad?" Sure, his father subvocalized, patting him on the shoulder. I think you're all set for next term. But Adrian's mother was not to be mollified. Adrian, I am sick of all this flakiness. I know exactly what you were thinking about. Adrian's heart sank. How could she know about how could she know about the bootleg? All that adolescent hand-wringing about your generation is distracting you from your real priorities, and it's time you smartened up. Grant me private access. I want to look at what you've been up to. Oh, shit. Hurriedly, Adrian flushed the bootlegs. His mother hadn't gone picking through his files in years, so it took him a moment to remember the mnemonic that erased the bootlegs and all records of their existence from his personal storage. In his cochlea, his mother made impatient noises, and that sure didn't help. Once the data was flushed, he granted her access. He watched dismally as his system log scrolled by, every file in his storage piping through his mother's keyword filter. The parents of the million are understandably resentful of their offspring, she read in a dangerous voice. It was the paper he and Mohan had been collaborating on, and he knew she wasn't going to like it. For whatever reason, they chose to bring a generation into being at a time when the world wanted nothing but. The sacrifices they've endured since are immense, woofy penalties that mount daily as their peers make their disapproval felt. Our parents are stuck in the closest thing the bitchin' society has to poverty, and it's our fault. She paused and drew breath. All right, Mom, all right, that's enough, Adrian said. I'll get rid of it. She snorted. You're damn right you will. Just adolescent nonsense. I know, Adrian said. I'm sorry. Mohan had a copy anyway. He could recover it later. Don't switch off my access either, she said, to Adrian's dismay. I'll be checking in regularly from now on. You've got to concentrate on your studies, not this. Words failed her. Adrian thought his mother would be mollified when Bosco called her later that day to say that he was admitted for the summer term in the Department of Applied Mathematics at the University of Toronto. But she couldn't let go of her suspicion that he was up to no good. Mohan's theory was that she was worked up over the possibility that she was nearly shut out of the stigma of mothering one of the million, and that she feared that he would do something that would rain down fresh shame on her. So random audits of his files continued, daily at different times. Adrian hardly flash-baked at all in the next week, and he fell into a grimy, hyper-real mood, bereft of access to others' consciousnesses. It wasn't that the bitchin' society had anything to complain about. Food, shelter, entertainment, travel, communications, all of it freely available. No disease that couldn't be cured with rejuve, or failing that, refreshing from backup to a clone. But 3 months remained until his term started, 3 long months of not being able to swap polemics with Mohan, of not being able to roll up the lovely consciousnesses that he scored through Mohan and jam them into his brain. After a week of it, he was positively buggy, ready to have himself frozen until classes started. During the scarce hours when he and Mohan were awake and online at the same moment, he was able to work remotely off Mohan's systems, but the lag between the kludged up channel made it so painful he could hardly bear it. His salvation came 10 days after the acceptance. He was en route to his private spot when it happened, thawing out on the curb outside of Union Station, chewing thoughtfully at his routing tag. He was approached by a stranger. The woman was a parent 17, and a quick back check of her public ID verified that she was actually 17, another member of the million, a needle in the demographic haystack. She snuck up on him while he was ruefully paging through the public directories where he'd put his bootlegs the last time his mother had gone tiptoeing through his public consciousness, salvaging what he could from the tatters of his beloved collection. She was wearing a cowl like his and had odd, vaguely Asian features, round-faced and flat-nosed, but with a fair cast to her skin that was almost paper-white. She tapped his shoulder and spoke aloud, a clear young voice ringing out in the mumbling white noise of the sub-vocalizing crowd. "Hi there," she said. A few people turned to stare, their eyes flicking up to HUDs where they examined the pair's woofy and designation. "Hello," Adrian said. "My name's Tina," she said. Her speech had long, spacey vowels in it, the speech of a jaunter somewhere in the dark nothings of interstellar space, crackling through adventure dramas on the net. "Adrian," he said, putting his hand out. She chuckled. "Wow, you really do that, huh? What? Shake hands? I've seen it in historicals, but never in real life." She shook his hand harder than was necessary. "I'm pleased to meet you, Adrian. What do you do?" "What?" he said again. "You know, what's your role? I used to help out with the hydroponics before we came here. Now my folks say I've got to find something new to do. What do you do? Adrian said. She was a jaunter, freshly back from space, probably landed at Aristide Interplanetary just north of the city. He didn't know much about jaunters, but he did know that their version of the Bitchin' Society was a little non-standard. I'm a student, he said. Wow, she said. Full time? What do you study? I'm doing applied maths at U of T. Will be, anyway, he corrected himself, this summer. Her face clouded for a moment as she chewed this over. How long are you going to be doing that for? It's a 4-year degree. 4 years? She said, shocked. Yes, that's a long time. Who's going to take your job when you go? What job? Adrian asked. He wasn't sure how he'd been drawn into this conversation, but he was enjoying it in a disorienting way. The job you do now, she said, as though explaining something to an idiot. He fished for words, then watched as comprehension dawned on her. You don't do anything now, do you? He grinned. Not really, no. She clapped her hands. You people are really freaky, you know that? What do you do all day if you're not working? Adrian opened his mouth, and she looked at him with such guilelessness that he made a rash and wonderful decision. I'll show you, he said, and struck off for the ferry docks.